And welcome back, folks. Bear with me for one moment while I send this tweet, and we're good. I had to make sure I got the quote tweet out there, but we are back. We are live, building the board, brought to you by On Tap Sportsnet. I'm joined by Steve Letizia. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
Doing pretty good, Q. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin finally, so feeling good. We're finally getting to spring, and we're finally getting closer to the NFL draft and finally getting closer to knowing what's going on with the Bears. So I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, we are hitting that weird time in draft communities of like we have our board is up to 125 players now, and it's like and our goal has been the top 100 this whole time, right? So it's like, yeah, I'm just looking at it like, man, we're missing someone. Who are we missing? Like, I'm just constantly paranoid with this anxiety about like, who could we be missing on this board right now and trying to find them. But I think we got a pretty good lineup there set up as it currently is.
Yeah, we'll probably add some, you know, we got another month or so we'll add more people to there for sure. But yeah, it's looking pretty good so far.
Yeah. And today specifically, so this is the last of our positional series. If you haven't caught it, we've talked about every position so far, done an hour-long podcast on every position group except for quarterback. This is the big one. This is the one that, you know, there are all the questions about what are the Bears going to do at quarterback. They got the number one pick, arguably the best prospect we've seen in years coming out this year at quarterback. This is a hot topic. So you ready to jump into it, Steve? Ready to get the conversation going?
Yeah, let's
going?
Do it. Let's all right, do it. Cool.
So as we start all these shows, we want to ask the question, three questions. One, what do the Bears have at quarterback right now? Two, how much draft capital do we expect them to spend on the quarterback position in this draft? And three, what traits are we looking for to fit in a Shane Waldron offense here? So starting that off, looking at, you know, what do they have at quarterback right now? They got Justin Fields, obviously, and they have Tyson Bagent on the roster too, because we need to talk about, you know, starter and backup here. Mm-hmm. They got two guys on the roster. What do you think about where the roster sits currently, what we can expect to see in the future here?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Fields, you know, is the Bears quarterback as we stand right now. And I think he's done enough that we've seen to be a starter in the NFL. I think, not getting into kind of like his trade value and stuff, I think, you know, he is a starter in the NFL. He's shown enough that. But the Bears are just in a unique standpoint, a unique position where they have the number one overall pick. So it's a good position to be in, because they have a lot of options, but it's also a tough position to be in because they have a quarterback who's a capable starter, even if he is maybe on the lower end right now. And they have a young backup too, in Tyson Bagent, who is an undrafted free agent who didn't look great when he played, but for an undrafted free agent to go and not look completely out of place, I think he's at least shown he can be a capable backup in the NFL. So, like I said, they're in a weird situation that they're in, but they do, in my opinion, have an NFL starting quarterback on their roster, which not every team can say, probably.
Yeah, it's a situation most GMs would love to be in, right? Like, you have,
right,
you were not a number one pick worthy team, and you have the number one pick in a great quarterback draft here with this awesome prospect staring you in the face. And
right
on the Justin Fields front, man, it's a tough conversation, right? Like, it's because you're right. He is very talented and he's shown enough bright spots that you're like, okay, maybe there's something to work with there. But to me, there's also enough flags at times where I just get, as far as the passing goes, like, he is such such an explosive runner, such an electric runner. But
yeah,
some of the flags with him as a passer give me a lot of heartburn when I think about passing up on some of these other quarterbacks, because it's like the stuff with how little he's throwing over the middle of the field, some of his turn downs in the tape, like where he's watching the play work out exactly how it's supposed to and just not pulling the trigger. And right, maybe that's a trust thing, maybe that with his teammates, maybe that's something just a block in his brain of like, I need to see it first. I don't know exactly what it is. whether that's something that he came to the league with, I don't really think that's true, because I think we saw some of it as a rookie, him doing that stuff, and it has kind of gone away over the years. But it's something that I'm not sure once it starts how fixable it is. And if it's
right,
I wonder, is that something that takes 2-3 years to get back to where he was? And it almost feels like a sunk cost fallacy to me at some point of like, man, I want Justin Fields to be that guy, but I haven't seen enough evidence at this point that he will be. And it makes it really hard for me to say, I want to stick with that guy as much as my heart wants to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think of it the exact same way. You know, he's shown so many flashes and you're like, oh man, like, if he could just, you know, harness those flashes and become more consistent, like, you really got a guy. And I think, you know, if we were sitting here and the Bears had the 9th overall pick, then it's a completely different conversation. We're not even having a conversation about drafting a quarterback or training up for a quarterback. We're saying, hey, if we get him a wide receiver and we get him a better line, like, he can turn into something. But it's just the position that they're in. Because, I, you know, there are times, like you said, where the guy's open and he just hesitates just a little bit long. You know, he's got a slower release than most quarterbacks, which, you know, it isn't a huge deal breaker, but it is something that where if you're not pulling the trigger right away, it just exacerbates that problem. So, yeah, it's, again, just the situation they're in. And I still believe that Justin Fields can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I just, at this point, this is my opinion, and the way I view how things are going, it's going to be a quarterback at 1. I could be completely wrong, but that's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And our friend Scott from Iowa chiming in the comments here asking if Caleb Williams is the greatest thing since sliced bread, or is he going to be a potato, or more likely somewhere in the middle? He gave us the easy answer, somewhere in the middle, probably. I mean, we all hope that he'd be the greatest thing since sliced bread, but we'll get to Caleb later.
Sure.
Next item on the agenda is, how much draft capital can we expect the Bears to be spending at quarterback? And I mean, this one's an easy answer, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. It's the first overall pick. I don't see them taking a quarterback like with another pick, because they just don't have enough draft capital. They're not going to try and draft like a, you know, fourth or fifth round rookie to see, you know, maybe we'll find something. They just don't have enough assets. The likely draft a quarterback at 1 and then not use any other draft capital on the position.
Well, even let's talk a little bit about the prospect that I've seen floated out there of, like, you know, trading back to 2 and taking Drake May, or trading back to 5 and taking JJ McCarthy or Jaden Daniels, or even later and taking Bo Nix. And to me, that is a death warrant to a GM. If you are Ryan Poles and you are passing on Caleb Williams to take a different quarterback, and Caleb Williams is good somewhere, and your guy is even average, you're done. Your career is done. You will always be the guy who passed on Caleb Williams at that point. If Caleb is good in the NFL, that's an important distinction here. But it's such a high risk decision to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's the way they're going to go. I mean, we'll talk individually about all these guys, you know, over the next hour or so. But I know a lot of people think this is a very good quarterback class, because there's a lot of good options up there. In my opinion, it's a 1 quarterback class. I actually don't really love a lot of these quarterbacks. I think it's Caleb Williams is in a tier of his own pretty easily, in my opinion. And, you know, again, I could be wrong. And valuing quarterbacks is pretty much the hardest thing to do in football. Otherwise, you know, if you could figure out how to evaluate quarterbacks with 100% certainty, you are going to make yourself a lot of money. It's just so difficult. But in my opinion, it's Caleb Williams and then three or four other guys who could be good. But there's a long way to go for them to turn into the quarterbacks they need to be in order to live up that top 5 draft pick.
Yeah. No, I mean, I generally agree. I think the gap between Caleb and quarterback 2 is wider than the gap between quarterback 2 and quarterback 3. But yep. I do like Drake May quite a bit, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Yeah. But first, we need to talk about our third question of, what do we think is a strong fit with Shane Waldron schematically, and just as far as what we're seeing on tape, where are we sitting there going, that could work right there with Waldron? What do you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on Shane Waldron's offense or like the Sean McVay offense or anything like that. But, you know, just from kind of what I have seen, you know, he is coming from the Sean McVay, you know, coaching tree. So that West Coast offense. So in my opinion, you want to get a guy who has a quick release, who can get the ball out quick, who can play in the rhythm of the offense. And then also be able, you know, you're always going to need a quarterback who can take, who's a strong enough arm to take shots downfield and everything like that. But you really need someone who's going to play just within the rhythm of the offense, take what the defense gives you, and just stay ahead of the chains. And there's a couple of guys in this draft class who I think could do that really well. There's a couple of guys in this draft class who I think could get there. But that's kind of just the way I view it. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I mean, so when I look at the McVay offense, and like I'll get more specifically to what Waldron was doing up in Seattle in a minute, but just it within the McVay branch of the Shanahan tree, which is like, you know, at this point we're getting to like the third power to the nth degree of the decimal. Like it's but I feel like the McVay offense since Goff left and Stafford got there has been very much of a collaboration between a free-flowing playmaking aspect and a on-time rhythm passing attack. Like it's merging those two things together since Stafford got there. Now, before when it was Goff, I think I agree 100%. It was much more rhythm. It was much more hitting your reads, doing what you're supposed to. And, you know, not having that hesitation at all in like trusting the scheme, trusting your players and teammates. But when Stafford got to LA, it hit more points of like, well, let's just let him work, you know, let's just let Stafford do this a little bit. And I think that's what we saw from Waldron a lot with Geno Smith in Seattle, too, was they had their times in the game where they said, okay, we need rhythm. We need rhythm. We need to be hitting this stuff where it is. And it felt like there were times to me that there were times where it was like, Geno, just go make a play.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's as simple as like it was the play call, but I think points in the game. So I do think, looking at that, I do think, I'm not sure whether Waldron wants that as much as a strong rhythm passer, or as much as he was forced to work with that in Seattle, but I know he's capable of working with that more artistic quarterback vision as opposed to be the surgical quarterback, you know?
And I think that's kind of, you know, just quarterback play in the NFL in general. You know, we talk about all these different schemes, but no matter what scheme you're in, you're always going to need to have a quarterback who can play within the rhythm of the offense and take kind of what the defense gives you. And then also, and then what separates those guys who can do that, like a Jared Goff, kind of as you mentioned with Sean McVay, and then Matt Stafford, who, you know, came in to replace him, is Matt Stafford is able to, when they need it the most, to go off, you know, off schedule and make those plays. And it's about when, it's about knowing when you need to take those chances and doing it at an appropriate time. Because you're always going to need to play kind of within the rhythm of the offense, no matter what scheme you're in. But then you need to what separates the good quarterbacks from the great quarterbacks is that ability to kind of go with outside the scheme a little bit and just kind of make a play when your team needs you. But I think, you know, what I've learned kind of, you know, over the years scouting quarterbacks is not to so much fall in love with those college plays where they're making incredible throws. But it's the first read throw, but it's a dime 50 yards downfield. It's like, that doesn't tell you, I mean, you want your guys to make those plays, but it doesn't tell you a whole lot about how that player is going to translate to the next level. It's about just kind of working within the rhythm of the offense. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on more, but you're right. Yeah. Stafford did come into that offense and kind of change it because they were able to do just a lot more things than they were able to do with Jared Goff.
Yeah, to your point, I don't think scouting based on the fun plays or the elite looking plays.
That's what I was saying, yep.
I don't think you can base your scouting on that, but I think it can be a part of it. Like, you know, if I've talked about on this show before, my scouting system is pretty simple. I have five options for a play: neutral, good, dominant, poor, or bad. And if, like you're saying, if it's just a first read bomb 50 yards downfield, perfect in stride, it's a good play.
He
put the ball where it was supposed to be on time, boom, hit him in stride, good stuff. It's not dominant, though. Dominant is saved for the second, third reads, buy some time in the pocket, and then unleash that thing. And that's what you see on some of these guys' tape. Like, the dominant plays are not that common in my grading. Like, it's a lot of good, a lot of poor, a whole lot of neutral, and a few dominants and a few bads. And like, usually when I'm looking at a top tier prospect. But anyways, let's go ahead and get to these guys. So
yeah.
We're going to start off with Bo Nix. And I think, I'm not sure how recently you might've watched Bo Nix. I just watched two of them yesterday. So let me get your thoughts and then I'll jump in afterwards.
I just watched one of Bo Nix's games today. Like, I'd watched him previously as well, but I just watched another one this morning. And yeah, I mean, I actually like Bo Nix a decent amount. Like, I don't know, I don't love him. It's like, I heard PFF Steve say this, like, I like Bo Nix, but I don't want to be the GM who finds out if he's good or not. Like, that's like I'll let someone else like take that chance, like that he's going to turn into anything more than just like a game manager, because that's kind of what I think of him. You know, he puts the ball where it needs to be and within the rhythm of the offense, like I was saying, but then you don't see those plays, those outstanding plays ever on tape. You know, it's always kind of just within the rhythm of the offense. He does throw with anticipation.
Two and two games.
Okay. That's not that bad. But they're not as consistent as, you know, other, the guys that we're going to talk about, over the next hour or so, but yeah. He throws with anticipation. He does do that, which is nice. That's something you really want to see, you know, from a young quarterback. I didn't think he was as accurate as I expected him to be. He was making completions, but it wasn't that pinpoint, you know, accuracy that you'd want to see from a guy who maybe doesn't have the strongest arm and who doesn't have that innate playmaking ability. So that kind of threw me off a little bit. It was a little bit not what I was expecting going kind of into his tape. And I also thought like his mechanics were just a little bit off. He seems to throw with just his arm a lot. He doesn't really get his lower body engaged. And I think that does affect his arm strength as well. I think if he kind of learned to get his lower body more engaged into his throwing motion, I think he actually could add maybe a couple miles per hour on his velocity, which would obviously help. But yeah, I mean, I like Bo Nix. I think he has a chance to be a long-term NFL player, either as maybe a, you know, average starter or at least a good backup, but I just don't see anything much more than that.
Yeah. I mean, the good Bo Nix is a gamer. Bo Nix is a grinder, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch his tape. I see something loosely along the lines of Gardner Minshew with more speed. Like,
yeah,
he's a little sneaky fast out there. Like, he'll fake you out and then go grab 40 yards on the ground when everyone was going the other way, which no one really expects from him. Makes him a little sneaky there. But ultimately, the thing that I just kept seeing and kept taking away during his games that really turned me off on him was, man, Bo Nix needs to win the short game. And his ball placement is not there. Right. His ball play, in order to survive in the NFL, let me start with this. In order to have survived this long, Bo Nix needed to throw with anticipation. And he does that, which makes anticipation throws a little less impressive to me. When it's a guy you're looking at whose arm strength requires it, like he wouldn't last as a starter if he didn't throw with anticipation, because he can't throw that thing through a keyhole, you know?
No.
So then you get to, okay, well then what does he have to do at the NFL level? He needs to be perfect with the short game, with the quick game, the behind the line of scrimmage. He needs to be hitting his guys in the right spots to set them up to get that yard after catch. And a lot of times the ball receivers are picking it up off the ground. It's out behind them. It's not where it needs to be to really be a successful NFL quarterback. I don't think it could be eventually, but it makes it really hard for me to see him as a first round pick because it's not there yet.
Yep. And it's not there yet. And he has probably the most passing attempts. Maybe him and Penix have the most passing attempts of this entire draft class. So it's not like he's a young guy, but like, okay, there's a lot of projection there. It's kind of you see what you get with him at this point, just because he has so many snaps. And yeah, I thought he was accurate but not precise. Like he was hitting guys, but not were exactly where he needed to be, leaving some yards after catch on the table for his wide receivers because they had to make slight adjustments to the ball, even on those short passes. And then, you know, as you get down the field, it gets, you know, gets harder and harder to hit those spots. So, yeah, some things to like, but more as a backup, you know, spot starter. Yeah. I do think he maybe like an Andy Dalton type career could be like, you know, where his ceiling is maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I really think he's going to bounce around multiple teams as a backup, get multiple chances to start, always be spicy. But never spicy enough to stick, you know. Like that's kind of the way that I see him. He's a fun watch though. He's a gamer.
For sure. Interesting to see where he goes in the draft. Like, is he going to be a first round quarterback? I don't know. Like if the Broncos at 12, if all the quarterbacks are off the board, are they going to pull the trigger? Or are they just going to roll their chances with whoever they got? But that'll be interesting. Man,
I have to think if all the quarterbacks are off the board. Already, like, I mean, like the top four, you know, the Caleb, Drake, McCarthy, and Jaden Daniels. The Drake just made me think of Seinfeld as I said that. The Drake, if those four are gone, I think you have a really hard time spending the first round pick on. I mean, maybe you can trade up with Kansas City to 32 to get that fifth year option still, and you go after it that way, but like, I'm just not sure who's taking Bo Nix behind you that you feel that urgent that you need to take him there. But let's go ahead and move on to Washington's Michael Penix. So what do you see on the tape with Michael Penix?
Yeah, Michael Penix didn't do really too much for me, to be honest. Another guy who's been in college forever, so it's kind of see what you see is what you get. A lot of injuries too, which we don't know the medical information, so I won't spend too much time on that. But it is something to note in his profile. Another thing where I thought he was accurate but not precise. A lot of times not really hitting guys exactly in stride where they need to be. He benefited a lot from the spread offense and with Romo Dunze and Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan, three really good wide receivers, and their tight ends were pretty good too. Just did really well, relied on them a lot, I'll say. So I wasn't super impressed with his tape. I will say that the game against Texas this year was probably one of the best quarterback tapes I watched this year. But then besides that, but that was like an outlier to me. Like he was throwing with anticipation. He was moving in the pocket well and buying time for his guys. Like he was doing everything. But then when you watch all the other games, those flashes don't pop up nearly often. So I don't know what happened during that Texas game because he was really good there, but I just didn't see enough over the course of this year to say that that's going to be the norm and not the exception for him going forward. And again, you know, you're talking about I think sixth year guy, maybe seventh year. I don't even know, but yeah, he's not going to get much better than what he is right now. So I think I probably like him maybe a little bit more than Bo Nix. I don't know. They're going to be really close for me. But not anyone I would consider trading down for.
Yeah, I've got him ahead of Bo Nix as well. And it's not by a ton, but I do have him firmly ahead of him. And man, I just gotta say, I don't know if I've ever watched a quarterback like Michael Penix. He's just, it's different. He is different than anything I've ever really seen. And that makes me feel weird. I don't exactly know what to do with it, how to evaluate it, because I see this just fire hose of a left arm and he's spraying it though. Like, I mean, that thing is high, that thing is low, the thing is left, right. Like it's all over the place, but the arm talent's pretty dang ridiculous. Like there are times where he's just doesn't have his base, is flipping it out, and it's just it's a rope, you know. It's weird, and the talent just feels so different to me. I get stuck with this, like, is he something between like a Byron Leftwich and a Tim Tebow as a thrower, and like a Drew Bledsoe in the pocket? Like when I come across prospects that feel this different, I get this feeling that they're gonna find ways to make it work, because I almost feel like they're so different because they've spent their whole career just making it work, and they're just really good at doing that, doing whatever it takes to survive, to win, to keep doing it. And I almost get that feeling with Michael Penix. And I'm not sitting here saying I'd go spend a first round pick on him for that, but I am intrigued by Michael Penix and what he might be able to bring to your team and do as a backup early in his career, and whether he can stick around long enough with the right coaching staffs to carve out a nice NFL career for himself. Like I get that feeling from him. I could be way off base on that, because as you said, there are plenty of red flags on the tape, but just how different he looks makes me think that a prospect that looks that different needs to be evaluated a little differently, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly fair. There were a lot more flashes on his tape. I don't know. It's tough for me to there are a lot more flashes on his tape than Bo Nix's tape. So I like that. Yeah. And that, you know, they're a lot more plays downfield with Penix. But just some of the ball placement to me was just a little bit off at times. Even the deep completions, which to me seemed more like Rome Odunze making a play rather than Penix putting the ball where it needs to be. Jalen Pohl too. Yeah. And I really like Jalen McMillan too, who was hurt this year, but he was, you know, pretty good receiver over the last 2 years. So it's just, to me, I just feel like he's more of a product of the offense. And I know, you know, scouting the stat sheet is not the way to go, but a lot of people see the 4,900 yards and 36 touchdowns and say, oh, okay, this guy's got to be a stud. And he's got a great arm talent. He's got a quick release. It's a little quirky release. Kind of reminds me of like a left-handed, like Philip Rivers, like a little shot put style. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's just a little bit different. But yeah, just the ball placement, and he's not mobile at all. And I feel like minus the Texas game, because he was maneuvering in the pocket really well there, I didn't feel like he had a great feel for the pocket, which is another thing that I put a good amount of emphasis on. When evaluating. So I think he could be a starter in the NFL. I just don't think he's going to ever be a top 15, top 12 starter.
Yeah, no, I mean, I generally agree. That's kind of where I was trying to get to with that. I was saying, I don't think that he's destined to be a career backup. I think that there might be something more there, but I'm not sure how consistent it might be. I mean, at the least, as long as he is keeping his missed throws out of harm's way, he's not going to make negative plays. Like, this guy does not take sacks.
Yeah, doesn't take sacks. He makes good decisions too. So even if he's a little bit off accuracy wise, at least he's throwing the ball to the right read and stuff like that. So that's a good thing, obviously.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to another guy who does not make poor throws, Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
What do you think of Jaden?
I watched a little bit more Jaden today. The first time I watched Jaden Daniels, I actually really liked him. I think I hit him in my QB2 at one point. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore, because I watched a little bit more of him, more late season games recently this week. And man, there's a lot of slot fades on his tape. It's pretty much Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas running slot fades, and Jaden Daniels putting the ball where it needs to be, which is good, but that's a tough way to make a living in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think he did a better job of going through his reads than I thought he did. Yeah. Than I thought he would based on, because you know, you hear about these guys and you read stuff about guys before watching them sometimes, and you have a preconceived notion about what you're gonna see when you watch them. And I don't know if it was necessarily a huge strength of his, because there were times where if the first read wasn't open, he was taken off. Hmm. But I thought he went through his reads a little bit better than I thought he would. Another guy who I wouldn't describe as pinpoint accurate. He's more down the field. It was pretty good accuracy, but in the short and intermediate, I thought he was a little bit off as well. And there were times where he, you know, I don't want to compare him to Justin Fields, because I know he gets a lot of, it happens a lot, you know, with, you know, a quarterback with Jaden Daniels, who is such an elite athlete. And that's a huge part of his evaluation as well. But there were times where Malik Nabers was waving his hands over the middle of the field, and Daniels was panicking a little bit in the pocket. So it's tougher. I do see a lot of similarities there, you know, where Jayden Daniels could have taken, you know, the 7 yard gain over the middle and decided, but instead decided to scramble. And some of those plays he scrambled for 40 yards and a touchdown, and some of those plays he ran into a sack. So it's, I don't know. I liked him a lot less on my second watch than I did on my first watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Daniels is a weird one because my film grade, and I've talked about how my film grades work, right? It's he has the highest film grade of any quarterback in this class for me because he doesn't make bad plays and he makes a lot of really not like really good plays. Doesn't make a ton of elite ones, at least as a thrower. But as a runner, that's what makes his eval tough. As a runner, he does make elite plays. But
for sure.
Luckily, our system is not all film grade, right? Because I see him, his film grade, best fantasy quarterbacks here. But his ceiling is lower. It's right there with Penix and Nix. Probably a little higher than them. It is higher than those two. But it's not in the same tier as a Caleb and a Drake May because I don't see the upside as a passer because of some of the things you mentioned. And mainly the over the middle of the field, he is very hesitant to let the ball loose the intermediate and deep portions over the middle of the field.
Right.
So much of that LSU offense, I want to say it was something like 50% of his yards this year came on curl routes and slot fades. Like that's a ludicrous portion. And you watch the tape and you see it's a lot like me playing Madden. I'm just running four deeps with a slant. And if the read isn't there, I'm taking off. Like,
yeah,
he has one of the highest scramble rates of any quarterback in the last 5 years from clean pockets, clean pockets, under pressure, anything. He is running. As soon as his read is not there, he just he takes off. And
yeah,
it's really tough to survive like that in the NFL. Like,
yeah,
you mentioned the Fields comp, and I think it's a fair one. But I don't think he's the runner that Fields is.
Like, no, he certainly doesn't have the size that Fields does either. He's real slight.
I'm pretty sure he has short legs, and that limits his long speed. Like, he is super quick, like 0 to 100, like that, right? He can break away from you from a dead stop fast as anyone. But once he's in the open field, he's almost always getting caught from behind. That's one thing that where Fields has a special trait. Once he opens up his gate, he's gone. No one on the field is going to catch him. Jayden Daniels doesn't have that, and that makes me think his upside as the runner is a little more limited. Maybe even not more limited. Maybe it's just different, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just different. Yeah, because he's not going to break many tackles. Like, he'll scramble and get you some yards, but he's not going to be going 80 yards running through arm tackles. He's going to get 12 yards and then get down.
Yeah. Yeah, and
or he's not going to get down. He's probably going to take a big hit. He needs to get down, is what I should say.
Yeah, it's something he needs to learn to just get down. But it almost makes me think it's. I see him more like a Mariota.
Okay,
as far as like his running might be a little more limited, but he's still an outstanding runner. Mariota probably wasn't as good of a runner as Daniels, but I think it's closer. And comes from an offense where it was a lot of single read stuff, a lot of repetition in what they're doing, and he executed that stuff really well. But once he got to the NFL, he needed a little more, and he just ran too much and took too many hits and couldn't ever quite hit. And Mariota, like, I would not be shocked if 2 years from now Jayden Daniels has the best stats of any quarterback in this class.
I'd be pretty shocked, but keep going.
I mean, I wouldn't, because I think he is the guy who's going to come in the NFL and have the easiest time with his legs.
Yeah.
Until he gets hurt, until anything happens and he's forced to win with his arm. Like, I'm not sure if he'll be winning games in those times, but his stats will look very pretty when you combine passing and rushing, I think.
I guess, to be fair, if he gets into the right scheme, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because if he gets in a very play-action-heavy, RPO-heavy, you know, scheme where he can kind of just do some like play action boots and get some easy complete half field read stuff like that. Like I think then yes, he if everything is surrounding him is great, then yeah, he has the skill set to be a real weapon with his athleticism and everything. But it's pretty scheme dependent, which some of the other guys will talk about, and that's just why he's probably lower than the couple other guys we're going to talk about. But I kind of mentioned with like Penix that like I thought the wide receivers were doing a lot of heavy lifting, a little bit kind of the same thing with Jane Daniels. But I also think you kind of talked about the scheme, like also did a little bit of heavy lifting. Like I think his stat line is very deceiving because, you know, we mentioned I looked it up because I was curious. He had 7 turnover worthy plays this year, or turnover worthy passes, I should say, 1.6%, which is a really good number. But like you said, he's throwing a lot of slot fades, a lot of curls, and he's avoiding the middle of the field. And he did have guys open in the middle field and just didn't pull the trigger. And I think that kind of makes that number a little misleading because he's just not throwing routes that lead to turnover-worthy plays. So that number might, you know, seem low, which is a good thing. And I think he does do, not to take away, I think he does do a good job of making good decisions as well. So that's part of it too. It's not only the scheme, but I think that also kind of plays into it as well.
I do almost think he's a little too risk averse.
Yeah.
I think he's too scared, or not scared is the wrong word, but too worried about making a turnover worthy play or making a mistake that he doesn't just let it rip at times and he overthinks it. I feel like you can see that within his tape at times.
And it's harder to coach that up than it is. It's harder to get someone to do that than it is to like rein them in, I feel like.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I think it's really hard to coach the somewhat gunslinger mentality into someone, right. But I think it's a lot easier to rein that in. And
right.
I don't think that's necessarily easy, but I think it's easier than trying to take someone who's a little gun shy and say, don't be gun shy.
Right.
Yeah. And one thing you did say about Daniels that I do like, I was really impressed by his ability to run that LSU offense. Like it was not a full offense, but he ran it really efficiently, which was impressive.
Yeah. And you got to do what's asked for you. You can't knock a guy because of the offense he was in. If he's running the offense effectively, you know? So.
Yeah. So we got another comment from Scott from Iowa. College football is crazy. Caleb Williams won the Heisman because Hendon Hooker tore his ACL. Jaden Daniels won because Jordan Travis broke his leg. Yeah, I mean, I think Daniels
would have won it anyway, but it certainly didn't help that Jordan Travis broke his leg. So yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, Hendon Hooker might have won it too. That Tennessee team was on fire.
It's possible.
But it's wild. And then David Snyder, shoes and flops fan. Building will only be as good as your QB. Major turning point here for the Bears. They need to draft a new QB and trade the old one. This will be make or break for them for years to come. I agree. I mean, it's a big moment in the Bears franchise.
It's the position that touches the ball on every single play. So you need to have your best player there.
All right. So on to the national champion quarterback, the Chicago legend, J.J. McCarthy. What do you think of this kid?
I like J.J. McCarthy a lot, to be honest. I liked him more than these other guys, which I think is why we're talking about him later on. I like pretty substantially. I know the offense he played in was a run-first offense, and that's it's weird because I think that's hurting him in fans' like viewpoint, but I think it's helping him in terms of the NFL because it's almost like you don't have as much tape to evaluate and nitpick, so it's like that intrigue, like, oh, I can get this former 5-star recruit to really be a gunslinger and turn bad around. Habits. But
Less
bad habits. But I actually really liked him. You know, when he did, when they did drop back and throw, I thought he managed the pocket really well. I really liked that about his game, the way he's kind of able to maneuver in the pocket and keep his eyes downfield and make plays there. I think the first time I watched him, I really, really liked him because I watched him early on in this process when I was still watching all the quarterbacks, and I saw his like first 4 or 5 games against I don't know whatever what teams there are, but a bunch of bums essentially. And I was like, wow, this guy's really good. And so I saw a little soured on him a little bit more as I watched him more, but I still like his overall game. I think he has a chance to be a successful pro. I do see like why NFL team, like he's starting to rise up draft boards and get into that top five conversation. I don't think he's a top five player in this draft, but you know how quarterbacks are. They always get overdrafted. So I think there's a lot to like in his game. The one thing, one of the things that, you know, I'm really concerned about is he's pretty much a one speed thrower. He doesn't really throw with touch. He throws a little bit of anticipation, but not a lot of touch. It's always just throw the ball on a line as hard as you can throw it and get into a spot, which I think you can do within the offense they were in Michigan, because there was a lot of play action, a lot of rollouts, a lot of, you know, but you can't get away with that in the NFL. Eventually, you're going to have to put some touch on the ball. I'm not saying he can't do it. I just didn't see enough of it on tape in Michigan. But I like the way he maneuvered the pocket. I thought he did a good job with his eyes to kind of manipulate defenders to get them kind of out of the zone and then throw behind them. I think he did a really good job with that. And, he, you know, these other guys we're talking about fifth-year, sixth-year guys who have a lot of reps. JJ McCarthy is, you know, a third-year player, not a lot of reps. Like, there's a lot of, you know, learning he still needs to do with at the quarterback position. But even still, I think he's kind of a little bit beyond his years. I really want to see him go to a team who doesn't start him right away. I really want to see him go to a team that's going to put him behind a veteran, or even if it's, you know, a bridge quarterback, whatever it may be. But just don't start this guy right away. Give him a year, maybe even two, and then I think he can really – I think he could develop into possibly the second best quarterback in this draft in a few years.
Yeah, I think if you give this guy a solid mentor to sit behind, I think he can really soak that up and become like really just learn a ton from it. I think one thing that NFL teams are really liking about this guy is, as we said, the lack of tape. It's almost a lack of bad habits out there that he has formed. I feel like NFL coaching circles will probably like the fact that inexperience and the coaching he hasn't been touched by a lot of coaches, and the coaches who he has worked with were Jim Harbaugh. You know, I do think that will hold weight, that they or maybe it'll hold weight either a different way. You never know with these guys, but I do feel like them knowing exactly where he's come from will go a long way there. And I was going into this tape not really knowing what to expect. Every Michigan game I watched, they ran the ball 50 times. You know, I didn't ever really notice JJ McCarthy. So I went and watched the two tapes where he threw, the two games where he threw the most, like the two games where he had to actually put in work to win the football game. Let me see. What was it? It was against Iowa in the Big Ten championship. And then against Purdue, he threw the ball like 40 something times. And man, I saw him getting stuck on his first read a fair amount, which was a bit of a flag. I'd like to see him get through those progressions a little faster, but oh boy, this guy's arm, man.
Yeah.
He can put that thing wherever he wants to.
Yeah.
It's shocking. It's like, you don't see a quarterback with this much arm talent not get used.
And right. Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. It's pretty wild.
Exactly.
The intermediate accuracy I thought was pretty up and down, but I thought it went up and down with his footwork is, he needs work. You know, he needs to clean that up. I imagine that I felt like it from the Purdue game to the Big Ten championship, it did improve. So it's probably something he was working on throughout the year, but his feet were all over the place. And when his feet weren't lined up, the ball didn't get to where it was supposed to be a lot of times. Yeah. I mean, it was still catchable, but it was just not on the spot. And it was such a contrast from when his feet were right. Because when his feet were right, it was like, man, this guy can sling the ball anywhere on this field. And I really liked what you said, his navigating the pocket. I thought he had a really nice ability to create when he had to, and really just avoided rushers pretty well. But there were a few times where it was the, oh no, throws under pressure of like,
yeah,
you cannot make that throw. You cannot do it that way. But ultimately, I see why this guy's jumping up boards, and I can understand where NFL coach is coming from saying, yeah, I want this guy. He operates a rhythm offense within the offense really well and shows flashes of being able to create. Coaches get paid to coach. They want their plays to be run the way they're supposed to. And that's something I think JJ McCarthy's going to do for you. But when stuff breaks down, he can still offer that upside trade.
Yeah, and he's 21 years old, so again, younger than the other guys we're talking about. He has less reps. He's a former 5-star recruit, and he worked, as you mentioned, worked with Jim Harbaugh. Sorry, God, he worked with Jim Harbaugh. So, and one of the Harbaughs, and you know, Harbaugh is talking him up to anyone who will listen. I'm sure every QB needy team at the top of the draft is reaching out to him. They all have contacts with him, and kind of seeing what he really thinks of them, saying behind closed doors. And I do think that he's giving him a really high praise behind closed doors, just as he's doing kind of in the media when he's talked him up. So I think he's got a lot going on for him that way. And one thing that we haven't really mentioned about him is, but he's a really good athlete too. The guy's fast. He's really, really athletic for a guy who has good size. I think he came in, he was listed at like 200 pounds at Michigan and came in at like 219 at the combine. I think that really helped him as well, because he showed that he can kind of bulk up a little bit. And that's something that, you know, a lot of young quarterbacks come in close to 200 pounds, and that's just too slight to play quarterback in the NFL. I think Jaden Daniels is going to have that problem, for instance, but at 220, like that's a really good size, and he's really athletic. And he showed, I forget what game it was. Maybe it was Ohio State, where they had that like reverse, the throwback to JJ McCarthy. I forget what game it was, but I was watching it. It was a reverse and then the throwback to JJ McCarthy. Jumped up, one handed it, and then made a great throw like downfield. Like that's the type of athleticism you just can't teach. So I think there's something there with JJ McCarthy. It just might take a few years to get it out of him. Or he might be out of the league in a few years. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the type of thing where if he's not in the right situation, it could just completely blow up. But the physical talent's there, I think. And Scott from Iowa, our resident Iowa fan here, says he's 22 of 30 for 147 yards against Iowa, the closest to an NFL defense in the Big Ten. Sounds like a career backup. You know, maybe you're right, Scott, but I would challenge you to go find the all 22 and sit down and grade every throw and see how you are feeling coming away from that. Because when grading the physical talent and the traits, it's just a little bit different than looking at the stats, and it tells a bit different of a story as to what the player did in that game. I didn't come away from the Iowa game saying this guy's got a first round film grade here. I said this guy's got a lot of talent, and that's something that you can probably work with. But moving on to Drake May, North Carolina, and this guy, I'm pretty sure, bleeds Tar Heel blue. I mean, his whole dang family went there. His dad played quarterback at North Carolina. His older brother hit a game-winning shot in the Elite Eight for North Carolina. Another older brother walked onto the basketball team there for the Tar Heels, and the black sheep of the family, his other older brother, you heard that right, three older brothers, won a national title pitching for the Florida Gators. So what do you think of Drake May, Steve?
Well, I'm going to push it back to you because I know you like him a lot and you've probably watched more than I have. So I'm going to ask you, what's your opinion on Drake May?
I mean, I think this guy would be, you look at probably the last two QB classes, this guy would be QB1. I mean, 2 years ago, I know that's not high praise because you're talking about Kenny Pickett was QB1. But like last year, this guy would have been QB1. That's not me saying I think he's going to be better than CJ Stroud. That's me saying no one thought CJ Stroud would do what he's done.
Right.
And Drake May has got, he's got all the tools, man. He's fast. He's big. He's strong. He's got a rocket of an arm. I mean, his footwork's a mess, but that's kind of the result of playing behind a really bad offensive line without much help around him. He's just out there running for his life sometimes and making plays. I see so much Josh Allen in his tape. And again, that's not to say he's going to be Josh Allen. You know, Josh Allen had one in 50 chance of working out the way he has, and it just has kind of worked. Like, prospects like that are higher risk, but man, they're high reward too. And I think Drake's a cleaner prospect than Josh Allen was. in my draft profile that I wrote for him, I actually said I did put Josh Allen as his final comp, but in the article I mentioned this, I see Matt Stafford. I see the arm talent of Matt Stafford. I see the gunslinger mentality of Matt Stafford. It's Matt Stafford, but 3 inches taller. Like that's really the way I see Drake May. It's gonna take some time. He needs to figure some stuff out.
Yeah.
But there is so much raw talent here that I think he's gonna figure it out, and he's gonna be a really darn good quarterback in the league. I believe, especially when you look at the more kitschy factors of three older brothers who all played D1 athletics and his dad played quarterback at a D1 university. I think there's a lot to really believe in there. And man, he's just, I know they didn't win. I know the Tar Heels didn't win, but Drake May left every ounce of sweat and blood on that field every time he stepped on it. And that it's just really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of the same things. The arm talent is definitely up there in that upper echelon of QB prospects that you want. So that's definitely, you know, the calling card for him. Like, if you're a big fan of Drake May, you see the arm talent and you think this guy's going to figure it out, which is he certainly could. I said going into this that I thought it was a one QB class. That might have been a little bit hard on Drake May. Drake May probably is my QB2. I just didn't love him as much as I know a lot of people do. I did see, you know, exactly the same things that you just mentioned, the arm talent and everything like that. And that's really, really intriguing. Another guy who's only, a 3 years, I think he's a redshirt sophomore. So very young and has a lot of upside still to his game. But there's just a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, which is the case for any young quarterback. So it's anything, and all of these things are going to be nitpicking because you still have that arm talent and that athleticism to kind of build off of. But I thought, I didn't love how he manipulates the pocket. I thought he took too many sacks that he shouldn't have. I thought he was drifting too much. And I did see something. He was kind of drifting into sacks a lot. And I did see something. I don't know how true this was. I don't even remember where I saw it. But about how he was drifting because he didn't trust his offensive line. He knew his like left tackle was really bad and he didn't trust them. So he's constantly always drifting to the right. And I don't know. Maybe that's the case. But still not a great thing that you want to see. And even if it's not his... Absolutely. It's just a bad habit. Even if it's not his fault and he needed to do that because his left tackle was so bad, it's just an easy way to just build that bad habit and build that bad muscle memory. And then you start doing it in the pros when your left tackle is really good. You just do it just because that's the muscle memory. So I thought that was something that he really needs to clean up. The arm talent was good. I thought he had a slightly elongated release as well, which always makes me nervous. He kind of brings the ball below his hip, below his waist and then up and around. It's not like an egregiously long release. It's just a little bit longer than I like. But again, this is all nitpicking because you have the arm talent. He's another guy who I really kind of like JJ McCarthy, who I really want to go to a team where he can sit for 2 years. Unfortunately, both these guys we're talking about are going to be top five draft picks, and they're not going to sit for 2 years. It's just not the way the NFL works. They might sit maybe at the start of the year, but then, you know, whoever the bad quarterback in front of them is, they're going to eventually get into the starting lineup by week 5, 6, 7. And that's, I think both those guys, Drake May and McCarthy, really just need some time to sit and develop. And I just don't think they're going to get that opportunity. So my only real concern for with May and also to McCarthy to an extent is they're just going to go to a bad situation. Whether it's the Commanders, who don't really have anything, they're going to be the starter right away. The Patriots, who don't have a lot in terms of offensive talent, and they're probably going to start right away. And it's just a shame because I think they both have a lot of really good traits. I'm not saying they're going to go to these teams and definitely be a bust because they can't sit, but I just think they would be really beneficial to both of them to kind of sit for a year or two.
Yeah. And in the comments here, Andrew Sichorski, I hope I pronounced that right, Andrew, having a QB sit for a few years works for some teams. I think about this way more than anyone should, but I've hit the point where I'm thinking about it as it's only as good as the situation.
Yeah.
When you look at guys who sat, Pat Mahomes got to sit. I think there's an Alex Smith line here. Mm-hmm. They need to sit behind someone who is as respectable or more respectable than Alex Smith. Because when you bring a kid in to sit behind a Mike Glennon, they don't care what that guy's saying. They're the number one pick. They're the number three pick, whatever it is. This guy's going to tell me how to play this position? I want a Heisman. What are we doing here? Like, I think that there is a lot of the respect needs to be there in that room. And they need to genuinely be like, I believe that every quarterback who has played in the NFL can teach any quarterback who hasn't something. But there needs to be a large degree of that. There needs to be not just something they can teach them. There needs to be something they can teach them about everything that is discussed in that room. Otherwise, I just don't think it's gonna be that beneficial or as beneficial as live reps would be. Because I think there's this taboo that live reps aren't a good thing. Live reps are the best thing to learn. It's just a question of, is a bad roster outweighing it? You know, that's where I tend to sit. But I think when you can sit a guy behind a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and Alex Smith, that is the best case scenario, hands down. But those guys need to be good quarterbacks.
Right. I'm laughing because this is my friend Andy, who's a huge Packers fan, and he's definitely talking about Jordan Love sitting behind Aaron Rodgers. And that's a great luxury to have. You know, if the key to developing quarterbacks is first have a Hall of Fame quarterback, that's a difficult standard to meet. But Andy, go screw yourself.
Andy, congratulations. Your Green Bay Packers quarterback room is in my head for the rest of eternity. So good job. Now moving on to the finale. The guy, Caleb Williams, wax poetic about Caleb and throw some negatives in there too, so people don't think we're too biased.
I'll throw some negatives in there because there's definitely some negatives. But yeah, I mean, to me, Caleb Williams is head and shoulders the best quarterback in this draft class. He'd be, you were saying Drake May would have been the QB one in the last 2 years, and I think you're probably right. I think Caleb Williams would have been QB one for the past, you know, I don't know, 5-6 years. I don't know what the actual number is, but at least that. So it's just, you know, watching his tape, there's, I know, like I mentioned this earlier, when, you know, you don't want to evaluate that high end plays, those off script plays as much, you know, you want to you see the stuff from the pocket as well. Caleb Williams does both those things. You see his highlights on Twitter all the time where it's him making an incredible play, scrambling out of pressure and making an incredible throw downfield. Those pop up all the time on his tape. But I think what gets overlooked is all the times that he plays within structure and plays, you know, within the rhythm of the offense and all that stuff. But man, he just has such a quick release. I mentioned, you know, Drake May, I thought, had an elongated release. JJ McCarthy a little bit as well. But Caleb Williams is so quick and tight. He gets his whole body, his whole lower body into it. And he just creates great torque. And just, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but he could probably has one of the stronger arms that we're talking about today. So the arm talent, I wrote this in my breakdown of him or my scouting report of him. You know, I don't know if he's a generational quarterback prospect. That word gets thrown around a lot. I think his arm strength his arm talent is absolutely generational. Just between his quick release, his arm strength, and his ball placement, there's just so much good things in there. All those three of those things are the best in this class, best in the last couple of class. So there's just so much good in terms of the arm talent that you can kind of overlook some of the other things. In terms of the negatives, you know, he does play hero ball a little bit too much. Again, I think part of that was the offense or the team he played on. USC did not have a good offensive line. They had some weapons, but not a lot of great weapons. So, and they're also, just more importantly, probably, is their defense was giving up 40 points a game. So if Caleb didn't play hero ball, the USC wasn't winning the game. But going back to what I was talking about with Drake May, with, you know, drifting the pocket, even if you needed to do that in college, that's a really good way to just build up bad muscle memory and to fall into bad habits. So that's something he definitely has to clean up. I did think there were times when he took unnecessary sacks too. You know, there are times when he's passing up easy throws to try and make a big play and instead takes a sack. And as I'm starting to learn when, you know, talking about quarterbacks, sack avoidance is such an important thing in the NFL. All the great quarterbacks in the NFL are really low in terms of avoid or high, whatever you look at, in terms of avoiding sacks. And right now, Caleb Williams is not great at that. So that's something he's going to have to get better at. But when you look at the whole picture, I think he does everything really well. Another thing I want to talk about is the Notre Dame game. That always gets brought up when talking about Caleb Williams. If you're on Twitter and you say something positive about Caleb Williams, you'll get 50 replies saying, what about the Notre Dame game? And I actually really, I think the Notre Dame game is a great way to evaluate him because he had a bad first half. There's no way around it. He threw three picks in the first half. It wasn't a good half. But what I liked about that game is that he came out of halftime and probably had one of his best second halves of the year. Like, he played in structure. He was making plays on time. He was making great throws. He was doing everything that was asked of him in the second half of that game. And he could have easily gone into halftime, lost. Like, I'm going to go out there and just try and, you know, sling it and see what happens. But he didn't. He made an adjustment. We talk about coaching halftime adjustments, but quarterback halftime adjustments. He's like, I'm not putting my team in position to win. I'm going to rein it back a little bit and just play within the rhythm of offense. And he did that, and he had a really good game. You know, they didn't end up winning the game, but I thought he did as best he could. And then he also came out the next week. Again, he could have kind of gone back into bad habits after a bad game, but he came out the next week and had a good game as well. So there's a lot of nuance to it, but I think there's the good absolutely outweighs the bad with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I mean, man, you look at this and you just say, USC was third in the country in scoring last year.
Yeah.
The next highest drafted guy in that roster is what, going to be the running back with the fourth round pick, maybe? Rice, the receiver.
Maybe Rice, one of those two, yeah.
Third round, maybe. I mean, I look at the Notre Dame game, man, and it's – they never got back within one score, but they went into half down 24-6.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 20-31 with 9 minutes left, and I believe that USC got back within range to almost be able to make it a four-point game, and then there was a fumble or something along those lines. But right. It was, to your point, he came out and played really well, and I believe he had a bad fumble down the stretch that was hero ball. But prior to that, it was multiple instances of his teammates dropping passes, of stuff going wrong that was out of his control. And I thought he played a really strong second half in that game, to your point. Now, our friend Scott, biggest question about Caleb Williams, is he taller than 6 foot, according to Twitter? I would hope that the combine put that to rest, but I'm sure there's still some conspiracy theories out there about that. Man, dude's magic. The dude makes magic happen out of nothing. And what do you want to call it? It factor, magic, something special. There's something different about the way this dude plays football. And I can bring that back to Michael Penix earlier. When it feels different, it needs to be assessed differently. And I thoroughly believe that with Caleb Williams. Like, the stats are there. The gaudy stuff is there. But also, you see people looking at, like, his time to throw is pretty ludicrous, right?
Right.
But that's where you need to, when it feels different, you need to keep digging and look at it a little bit differently. And on Twitter, Kyle Morris, his account, Start Kyle Orton, he dug deep into that time to throw. I don't think the guy has slept. I think it's all he thinks about. But he found really encouraging stuff. I would encourage anyone who hasn't read it to go over to the Bears blog and read his write-up on Caleb Williams' time to throw, because basically what he found was that when Caleb Williams was not under pressure quickly, his time to throw is right there with anybody else's when they were not pressured quickly, which means that when his O-line was not breaking down instantly, he was playing within the structure right there with anybody from the basis of getting the football out on time. But it was when that pressure hit quickly, his time to throw went up to something ludicrous, like 8 seconds, which means he was buying 8 seconds of time before he threw the football and wasn't taking those sacks. Like, I mean, he took some sacks in there, but
sure.
When that pressure got on him quickly, he bought more time than any other human on Earth probably could. Yeah, that's some nutty stuff right there that you just don't see every year with a prospect.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Kyle's article, because that was something I was going to mention as well, because that did a really good job. So I just want to give that one another shout out. Make sure to read that. And yeah, just the way he can avoid pressure is just so top tier. And it's not only the avoiding pressure, but it's avoiding pressure and keeping his eyes downfield. And he just kind of has like a sixth sense about, you know, where the rushers are coming from. Just keeping his eyes downfield when that happens and still making a play. Like, he's athletic and can scramble, but that's not his first instinct is to, oh, there's pressure, I'm going to scramble. I'm going to step up in the pocket, or I'm going to step to the right and see if I'm going to give my guy an extra second to get open. And if they do, he's going to hit him. And if not, then he's going to buy another second and another second and then take off kind of as a last resort. So just the way he just manipulates the pocket is something that I have not seen from a prospect in a long time.
His instinct to flatten the curve for an edge rusher to crush him by stepping up is just different. Like the way that when he has edge rushers come and run in the circle around the tackle, and he knows that he's not going to have the time, he steps backwards to make it easier for the edge rusher, just to give them, like, it's like, you know, holding out the cheese to the rat, like,
yeah,
come get it. And then steps up and manages to keep his eyes downfield in a lot of those situations, which is just, that's not something that you see for many NFL quarterbacks, let alone college quarterbacks. It is a different trait. It is something that Aaron Rodgers has given me nightmares about. Like, that's something that I want on my football team. That's something I want in my quarterback. And, you know, if he's a little bit of a diva, so is Aaron Rodgers, so is Tom Brady, so is Peyton Manning. I'm cool with it.
Pat Mahomes, they're all have a little bit of diva in them. Yeah, and I think Aaron Rodgers, that's still the comp that I always go back to. And it stems from that just the pocket maneuvering and keeping his eyes downfield. That's a big part of it, just avoiding sacks and everything like that. And I think, like, you know, other people compare him to Kyler Murray, which I think is also a good comparison. And hey, if you're telling me we're getting 6'1" Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray is what, 5'10"? Like, if you tell me we're getting 6'1" Kyler Murray, okay, great. I'll take that all day. That's a huge win, even if that. And if you're talking about that as like his floor, like, that's incredible. I love that. Like, give me that. That's the best quarterback in Bears history by a wide margin. Yeah. So if that's kind of like what you're looking at as the floor, and then you have the chance to get him a Mahomes, or
rookie, didn't he?
It was close, at least. And if you're telling me the ceiling is a Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, then hell yeah, let's go for it. Let's take a swing. But I do think his floor.
Correction: Kyler Murray has not hit 4,000 yards as a passer. He was close as a rookie at 3,700, but he still has always come up a little short.
Yeah, a little short. I see what you did there. But speaking about it, kind of his floor, because I think it gets thrown out there, like, I actually think he has a relatively high floor as a quarterback prospect, because I think he does so many things well, and with his arm talent, like, even if he doesn't reach his potential, I think his floor is that of an average starter, you know. And if you can, you know, obviously that would be bad, you know, not great if you get an average starter using the first overall pick, but you get an average starter in a rookie contract, and you can make that work if you need to. But that we're talking about like the worst case scenario. I think with everything he has to offer, even if he doesn't clean up some of his, you know, hero ball antics and, you know, maybe takes a few more sacks than you want him to, you still can win with that profile in the long run.
Howdy to our friend Ron saying that we need a high floor QB in Chicago at Loose on Tap on Twitter, our co-host. But anyways, yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm just sitting here trying to think, like, man, I don't know who I would comp his floor to, because he's so, like, if we're talking about his floor, that he does not reach anything above his floor, that means that he kept fumbling.
Sure.
It means that he played too much hero ball. But I think that's still a quarterback who's doing some pretty good stuff, though. Like, those are the two big things that will hold him down. And they're legitimate things, right?
Yeah.
There are things that will prevent a team from winning football games. But I'm not sure I can think of an example of a guy who has the field vision, the arm talent like that, and continued to have struggles with that, with those things. Right. Like the sacks, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I think you're right. I think there's a very high floor on this guy that, I mean, Scott from Iowa says his floor on a bad team is Justin Fields. I mean, I just think he's so much further developed as a passer than Justin is. Like, already the way that he utilizes the entire field and his pocket presence, like the fumbles and the sacks, yes, those would be similar to Justin, but I think his passing floor is higher than where Justin is currently still.
Yeah, and he doesn't, I mean, he doesn't have the rushing ability that Fields does, but he's also not a bad athlete. My point is, he's not a bad athlete either. Like, Justin Fields is in a class of his own, well, class with like Lamar Jackson in terms of quarterback rushing ability. But Caleb, you know, is pretty athletic as well, and he does a good job of, you know, creating with his legs too, and he does a good job of getting down and taking and sliding and not taking a big hit or getting out of bounds, something that like Jaden Daniels really struggles with. So there's a lot to like in this game, and yeah, there's concerns, but it seems like, and you know, all of his concerns are fixable, and everything's just kind of nitpicking a little bit because he does everything else so well.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that does it. Scott, one more thing. He was saying in regards to Hero Ball and injuries. Yeah, I think that makes sense, Scott. I feel you on that. But that wraps it up for us. Thank you, Steve, for joining us. Make sure to go follow Steve on Twitter at CFC Bears, correct?
Yep.
All right. Make sure to go follow him. If you missed any of our episodes, make sure to go check them out. We did every position on the football field. Broke down draft prospects for them, talked about Bears fits, all that good stuff. Make sure to go check out our scouting reports. We have about 85 written over at ontapsportsnet.com. We should have a handful more coming out for you guys. Our top 50 big board will be coming out this week. We'll have another mock draft out. If you're a Bulls fan, a Bears fan, a Cubs fan, a White Sox fan, a Blackhawks fan, a Fire fan, go to ontapsportsnet. Check out the content. We have multiple articles about any given team coming out daily. Go check it out. We have podcasts about all of them. And thank you guys for joining. Please like, subscribe. Please, more important than anything, give us a rating if you liked what you saw. If you didn't like what you saw, let us know. Let us know why. But if you did, a rating means the world to us. It helps us push our content out more and more. Those ratings go a long way. And thank you guys for joining us. Have a great night.